Welcome, everybody, to the Out of Chicago podcast, where our topic this week is going to be customer service with Jerry and Melissa Guiones. So welcome. I'd like to welcome not just one, but two people today, and that is going to be Jerry and Melissa Guiones. And the best way to describe them is that if you're at all in the wedding or portrait industry, there's a very good chance that you've heard of them. Everything from Jerry's cheeky sense of humor, which he happens to have all the time on stage, and Melissa's never-ending smile. I think that I see her sometimes at 8 in the morning at a conference, and she has the smile, and I saw her once at 2 a.m. after the conference, and she still had the exact same smile afterwards. So I know them best for...
There's only eight hours of every day that she doesn't smile. That's when she sleeps.
That would be debatable, I would bet.
And even then, sometimes I'll see her still sleeping with a smile on her face, but it's all good.
Yeah. And you guys are also not bad photographers too. Aside from all that, so you have an award or two under your belt. So I'd like to welcome to the show Melissa and Jerry Guiones. How are you guys?
Thank you. We're doing good.
It's good.
Thanks for having us.
I'm catching you guys right before you're about to leave for Australia, right?
Yeah, we leave this time next week. We'll be on a flight heading back home to our studio in Australia, and we have some work lined up there. And then, we spend half our time, about 4 to 5 months a year in Australia, and then the rest of the time here in L.A.
Very cool. Melissa, I've got the first question to you, and just pretend Jerry's not there for a moment. But tell me honestly, when you get to Australia... does all of Jerry's sex appeal just go out the window with the accent, and now you're the sexy one with the accent, and he's just like the normal guy walking around? Is that how it works?
It's hysterical. I mean, he's sexy all the time, I'm not going to lie, but it's so funny because when we get there, I forget that it's a big deal there. I mean, Australia is pretty remote, and not that many people have gone to the U.S. And so, you know, you're just having your day where you're just going to the post office and not thinking anything about it. And then the minute you say anything like, oh, you're from America, and then all of a sudden it initiates this whole other conversation, you forget that that's a thing. Because here I go to the post office and I'm just another person, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that her voice is noticed a lot more than obviously mine, because I'm just one of the crowd there, right? So she's like, oh, my God, you speak American. You're like,
yeah. He's not even that great of a photographer, apparently, in Australia. He's just like an average photographer. Like, that's how it works. And it's all the accent.
We just flick the switch, man. That's it. That's why I spend time here. You know, you're always a hero out of your country.
There you go. That's the secret. Whatever country I want to go. Well, my wife is from Spain, so I guess we would make a good combo traveling between Spain and America, maybe, in that case.
Love Spain.
Nice.
Awesome.
So let me explain a little bit of the backstory for our topic today and why I've got you guys specifically on the show for it. It started back when I happened to run into David Anthony Williams, who is one of the jury chairs for the WPPI print competition. And he asked me, like, do you enter the print comp? And I actually had no idea who he was or what he did. And so we chatted a little bit about it. I said, no, I don't. And I had like a couple minor issues with it. So when I got back to Chicago, I sent him like a little note, like, hey, it was great meeting you. Then we chatted a little bit about the print comp, but I got a phone call from David. And so we chatted for like 30, 40 minutes. And after that, he said, you know, do me a favor, like the email that you sent me, forward that on to Jerry for me. And so I did. And I sent it on to you, Melissa. And when I sent you guys that email, it was a very short time later that you actually picked up the phone and called me. And I was certainly not expecting it. You certainly didn't have to do that. Probably much of it could have been answered via email. But I was surprised at the level of customer service that you guys provided for just one random guy with like a couple issues and questions about the print competition. So I was very impressed with that. And even after the print competition, I wrote you guys a little follow-up email. And again, you reached out and called me, and we spent about another hour on the phone. So in total, we spent about 2 hours or so on the phone. It was a great experience. You answered any questions that I had, and you were very direct. And so it was an overall great experience. And that's why we're on this topic now. So I guess my first question would start off with, how many hours a week do you spend randomly talking with guys on the phone who just have like a random question here or there.
You'd be surprised.
I mean, you buy me a drink and you'll never know what happens. Well, to be honest, it's funny because like Melissa, I mean, she types 120 words a minute and she manages, you know, we've got five companies, five or six companies, I guess, when it comes to Australia and the US. So she's the diehard manager that just manages everything. And she actually prefers email. I actually personally prefer Skype, what we're doing now, for example, or I prefer phone conversations, because what you can do in a phone conversation could take days or 20, 30 emails. And you know, if there's any kind of, you know, I see any potential issue as a potential fire. And, you know, if I can put the fire out before it becomes a flame and before it becomes a bushfire and all that kind of thing, then fantastic. And above and beyond that, it's just courteous to do it that way. You know, people have this perception of us that we are famous and all that kind of stuff. We're not. We may be well known amongst photographers, but no one knows us on the street. So we're just a couple of people, you know, managing you know, certain companies, and we're photographers. We're working professionals, and we appreciate good customer service. So we like to do that ourselves for other people. You know, it's funny. Melissa is the nicest person in the world. But if she gets bad customer service, you will see her wrath, and only I will ever witness that. But like I said, it's just one of those things, you know. You've got to do what's right, and not the thing that suits you. You've got to do what should be done based upon what I would prefer if I was in your shoes.
The hardest part about that sometimes can be to seem genuine in doing so, because I'm on a lot of different forums and groups, and I see photographers post and say, you know what, I saw a venue use my image and they used it in an ad, and what should I do? And people start giving suggestions of like, well, you should send them the cease and desist and the notification of copyright and all of that. So it's not just even reacting, but it's reacting almost with a positive or non-negative attitude. And it seems like you guys are great at doing that specifically. I never once...
Well, it's funny. It's funny because the first reaction normally is to be so aggressive and so negative and look at it negatively, and you often create problems that just weren't even there in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, huge. I never once for a moment felt that when I asked the questions in my initial email to you guys, I never once felt that it was like dumb, or I simply just felt like it was truly a concern to you. And that's the amazing part that I don't see as much today. I see people who say like, yes, there's customer service, and sometimes it feels more forced than anything else. How do you keep the genuineness of it? I'm sure you get tons of emails, tons of calls, and a lot of communications. How do you keep yourself from wearing out with all that?
Well, the thing is, it's either you're genuine or you're not. It's not like if you're acting, I mean, certainly people will do things for business reasons, but if you genuinely care about people, that will shine through in whatever dealings you have with anybody. You know, like, for example, what a bride, for example, might be fussing over something really silly and small. But I'm like, well, I'm not so much caring about that exactly silly thing that's small. I care about making her feel good and giving her a good experience. So, it's also a male way of thinking to dismiss something as trivial, because we want to fix things. You know, we're men. We think logically, and then women, you know, probably lean towards being more emotional than logical in a different order. So I've been dealing with brides now for, you know, 22 years in my own business, and, you know, a couple of years before that in someone else's. So it's just one of those things that you just have to be genuine. And there's going to be some people who will be paid to be genuine. You're paying me money. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm there to make money. So you are paying me to either pretend to be genuine or just play the game. For us, we care about people. And when it comes back to the competition with your questions and we've spoken a couple, two, three times now, it's purely because we're running this competition. We are speaking on behalf of potentially tens of thousands of photographers. So we don't assume that we know everything. Certainly we have a very fresh perspective on the industry because we hear a lot of people. We're teachers, we're photographers, we're exhibitors, all those different things. So, you know, we like to collect information and then make our own mind up. But if ever we hear something that's of concern, and it could either just be something that's silly, we can just give you our perspective as to why we've done what we've done, or perhaps we take your superpower and add it to our own, and all of a sudden we become more powerful again. So
it's also a mindset. Like, I think that it's probably a lot. It comes naturally for some people to naturally think of a situation in a positive light, and it's more natural for people to be negative about something. And mm-hmm. so it may be harder for some people to force themselves to look at a situation in a positive light or give somebody the benefit of the doubt before reacting. But either way, we have to do it, whether it comes easy for us or not, because that venue who used images without asking may genuinely not know that that's not cool for a photographer. So before you go out and attack them and send them a cease and desist letter, it may be something as simple as just giving them a quick phone call, and now you've made a new connection at a venue that you can work with. Mm. So you can't always assume. I was driving yesterday and someone started beeping like crazy at everybody and cutting in and out of everything, and like, I could have thought that this person was the biggest jerk I've ever seen in my entire life, or it could have been somebody who just got some really bad news and is racing home to see their wife. You know what I mean? Like, you never know what a situation is.
Sure.
And so you can't go in attacking and expect to have good results and expect to have long-lasting clients or get good referrals or have a situation end positively.
And you know where I think some of that actually comes from, some of the negativity within the industry, I think it stems from just being online. When you remove the face-to-face aspect of people, and if you never head out to a conference, then you're left with nothing but, what do you think of this photo? I think it sucks. All right, well, that's appropriate. I appreciate that my photo sucks. And then what else? And then somebody else chimes in and says, like, should have shot that with a Sony. And then the conversation loses completely. So it's like, you don't feel, I never feel re-energized after shutting off Facebook. That's all I can say.
Yeah,
I call those people Mighty Mouse, because mm-hmm. they can be mighty behind the mouse, but then when you speak to them in person, they all lose their confidence and all that kind of stuff. So that's the thing, is that if I see a potential problem, you know, I've got a very thick skin. You know, there's not much you can say to me or about me that's going to really freak me out. But when it disrespects someone else, that's when I have an issue. And that's, I'll give you a perfect example based upon what you just said. Like, we've been traveling relentlessly for several years, and well, actually, you know, 15 years, but probably ridiculously now for five. But, you know, after WPPI, I'm finally here and been in our place to do some normal work. So I've been sharing images online a lot more than I do when I'm traveling. And I would post an image of a client just to, you know, give inspiration to other photographers as well as share my joy for what I do. And then you'll get photographers jump on there and actually create negative comments about my images, or you should have done this, you should have done that. I'm like, my comment would be, just respect the fact that I'm a working professional and my clients don't want to see negativity on their images. And then someone questioned it. Well, Jerry, aren't you supposed to teach and aren't we supposed to have this conversation? I'm like, well, I appreciate that, but, you know, don't forget I'm a working professional. Would you like to me go on your wall and post a negative comment on a wedding photograph that you're proud of and your clients love? I guess what I'm talking about is, it's a symbol of that some people are just, they have this negative vibe. They have this cynical perspective and they're looking for an issue. They're looking for a problem. And when you look for a problem, you'll find it. You'll find it in everything. And unfortunately, because we deal with so many photographers on different levels, you know, sometimes when people don't give us the benefit of the doubt, let's say something went wrong or a payment promo code didn't go well or anything like that, they react like there's this malicious problem out there. And I'm like, guys, relax. You know, we know the problem. We're fixing it. It's all done. And I'm like, if they treat their clients that way, I feel really sad that I wonder how they would run a successful business.
Yeah, that could be a face that they put on. You have the client face, and then you know that as soon as you walked away from it, that it's like, okay, like that it's changed. And you feel that sometimes in a restaurant is when I feel that. I can tell when a waitress is like, I love this dish, you should absolutely get it. And then when somebody's just like, just stumbling through their job, I think that's one of the easiest places.
That's right.
Very true.
What's your overall customer service experience like? Let's say I'm coming in as a wedding client. How do you guys differentiate yourselves in the service portion of it? Obviously, I assume that your work always has to be stellar. Like, for professional photographers to be charging a substantial amount of money, I assume that you know how to use at least a camera and get your lighting down. So I think a lot of it boils down to the personality and the treatment of the clients. What do you guys do for your clients?
It is a huge part of the entire experience. And I think that even a photographer who's mediocre or is starting out and doesn't have as great work as maybe another photographer that they see, that shouldn't discourage them, because I think you can still set yourself apart by having great customer service and a great personality and not have great work, like even building up to that point. So it's really interesting. I've seen many studios who just have average work but are completely slammed with business and work because they are just so wonderful to be around and offer such an amazing experience. So that definitely has the potential to make your business skyrocket. For us, it's all, there's just two of us. So we're not dealing with a massive studio with tons of staff. So our clients are always in contact with either Jerry or myself leading up to the first meeting. When they first inquire with us, whether it's on the phone or by email, it's pretty much all me. So I get to know them really well, chatting to them about their wedding, talking to them about different options. And then when they come in to meet with us for the first time, that's when we sit down all together. And then Jerry works his magic at the studio and we show them all our work and they fall in love with us as a couple, I guess, is our goal. But as far as the actual customer service part goes, our intent is to never let anyone wait. So when an inquiry comes in, we respond to it right away. We respond to any questions via email within 24 hours. Everything gets done right away, because if we wait, somebody else may have already responded to them, may have already set up a meeting with them, and then we may have lost that booking. So it's all about not letting anyone, they're hot, they're excited. They saw the website, they saw our work, they're interested in us right now. 24 hours, they may have moved on to somebody else. You know, they may have seen someone else that they're now really excited about as well. So you want to kind of strike while the iron is hot and get them involved in a conversation and communicate with them and get them in to see you.
Yeah, we're in a very sort of now society, and I've noticed that when I respond, I'm sometimes sitting around and I see the email pop up live on my inbox, and I respond. I usually, you know, a minute or two, let's say, for me to type out the response. And I would say that it's a good 9 times out of 10, the response I get from them is, wow, thank you so much for the fast response. It's like, because they're almost not expecting it that quickly.
Or it could be perceived that you're desperate.
Yeah, that's
it's like, oh my God, an inquiry that came in. Oh my God, first inquiry for this month.
Well,
actually, I want to. Yeah, that's right. Melissa's being a bit modest. There's one thing that she does exceptionally well. Well, there's many things, but in this particular case, I mean, anyone who meets Melissa knows that she's just one of the most joyful, passionate women or people you'll ever meet. And she's like that behind closed doors as well. It's not an act. It's just the way she is. She's got this incredible disposition. So I remember when I first started working with her, as we, you know, became a couple and she started working with me, I saw her typing like 120 words a minute, like, you know, with purpose. And she's smiling at the keyboard. I'm like, I'm looking at her. I'm like, what are you smiling about? She goes, no, nothing. She keeps on typing. I don't know. No, seriously, like, what are you responding to? And she says, I'm responding to a wedding inquiry. And I said, so do you notice that you're smiling? She says, well, I don't know. My joy is going into that email. And so if you've ever actually had dealings with Melissa on an email, you'll actually get that warmth coming through, which is very rare with text, you know, the typed word. And then I reckon about a week later, she was looking all somber, looking all upset, and she was typing. I'm like, what the hell's going on? What's wrong? Are you okay? She goes, no, nothing. Keeps on typing away. I said, well, no, seriously, what's going on? She goes, well, we had an inquiry for a booking. You know, we told them that, you know, that they should book soon because we've got another inquiry for that date. And consequently, the second inquiry booked on the same day that they inquired, and she had to email that first couple and with empathy say, we apologize that we're no longer free for the day. So what I'm saying is your energy is crazy the way it can translate through your fingertips on a keyboard, in the same way that if anyone's ever done a professional phone course, which I have, you have to smile before you answer the phone because people can hear the actual smile, you know, in your energy, in your voice. So like I said, I mean, she's a master at that. So she's an incredible first impression for our business. And the thing is that, see, she can say that I'm great. I can't say that I'm great. So
it's true.
So she starts the first impression and then I come along and then we sort of selling, you know, ourselves as a couple, and then Melissa will, you know, probably spend some time away, then I will get in nitty gritty with them. So that's sort of, I wouldn't say it's good cop, bad cop. I'd say great cop, good cop, and then I talk business, and then Melissa's not there. So
yeah, and when she says you're great, that means that you better be great after that.
Yeah. Exactly.
I can actually attest to that. So here I'm going to tell you like sort of a rejection story by Melissa. It was in an email to me, so it was a while back. You likely don't remember, but we have our own conference that we do. It's called Out of Chicago, and I said, "Are you guys interested in being instructors?" And you had some travel plans, so you're not going to be around. And then I said, "Well, we're still actually thinking about dates. So if anything else works for you, let me know." And then Melissa wrote like the sweetest like email of like, "You know what? Like our 2016 right now is just like looking." I wouldn't do it justice by reading it, but I can just say it was the sweetest rejection email. And I wrote back. I wrote back to you saying, "I even enjoy being rejected by you. It was honestly the most pleasant experience."
I remember that.
It was fantastic. I'm just going to write you guys.
Imagine not being rejected.
The what?
Imagine not being rejected by her.
No, that would have been even better. But honestly, I'm just going to write you guys to be rejected on a normal basis. I feel like if in print competition the two of you gave my images a 69 or a 68, I'd still be smiling and be like, "Well, you know, it happens." Understandable.
<That's> great. That's funny.
So what is the secret? You guys work together and you're around each other a lot. What is the sort of customer service and attention secret for you guys to keep it fresh and not want to get as far away from each other as possible that happens to so many people that work together?
You know what I think? It's funny because we really are together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the few times that we are away because we have an appointment or something like that, it's really weird. We've now been together for 5 years. So it's very weird for us not to be doing something together. But I think that when we first got together, I came from Boston. I had my own studio there and I was used to being, you know, the main shooter, running the business. And then I came in to work with Jerry, who's also used to the same thing. And having to come together and figure out our roles was a big part of the learning process when we first started working together. And what we've done and discovered is that we each have our very specific roles in the business. So I have my specific tasks where we actually sat down and talked about what each of us would do. And I do my job. And then Jerry's not constantly looking over me, second guessing any decisions I make. Anything that's major with the business, we decide together. But the day-to-day stuff, I'll do my thing. And then he's not second-guessing, looking over my shoulder. You know, you probably should have done this. Or when something goes wrong, to Jerry's amazing credit, never says, "Oh, I should have done that myself." Or, you know what I mean? And then vice versa. Jerry's got his job that he does within our business. And that's his thing. When he's doing it, I don't have to question whether it's going to get done. I don't have to second-guess the way he's doing it. And in that way, we each have our own very separate roles, and we don't step on each other's toes that way.
And to be honest, actually, the more you say that, I don't actually think we've ever had a specific conversation about our roles. I mean, we have endless conversations about our ideas and goals and what we want to achieve and where we're heading and all that kind of thing. But it's weird. Anything that happens, there hasn't been a specific conversation where, okay, you do this part of it and I'll do that part of it. It's almost happened organically that we just know exactly
what our strengths are
and what we need to do. To be honest, I think we both can do probably each other's jobs.
Yeah, I'm sure we could.
I used to own a studio doing 300 weddings a year with 15 staff. So doing all the books and the bookkeeping and all that kind of stuff. And now it's a little bit different, but I think that's what's quite amazing with our relationship is that we just organically know instinctively the way things work. And if there's a new process, it just happens. Perfect example, right? We'll photograph the wedding. I'll download the cards. I'll go through the blinks and, you know, basically edit the wedding. Then I will give it to Melissa. She'll send it up to Lavaloo and they'll do what they do. It'll come back. She'll activate the gallery. It'll come back to me. I just organically design the album, pre-design the album. She'll make the appointment for the actual couple to come back with the album. I do the album order appointment. You know, it's designed. Even just before this phone call, you know, I've designed the album and with the retouched images, and you know, and now she's going to send it to them just to give them a once over before we order it. Then she says, "Hey, Jerry, it's ready to go." So what I'm getting at is it's, everything is seamless, and it's just very painless. It's really easy.
I think for any couples that work together, or even if they're not a couple, like in their personal life, but are business partners. I think one of the biggest things for us that makes us not be able to work together and not want to kill each other, as some couples say they do, is we have very specific parameters. And this we did talk about when we got together.
Sure.
For sure. We're very specific about this, where this is our work time. And at 6 o'clock every single day, we shut the computer down and then we become a couple and we have dinner together and we go out somewhere, whatever it is. And then on the weekends, we're shooting, we're working. If we don't have a session or don't have a wedding on a weekend, then that is a dedicated day off, no work done. So Friday night, it's all closed. If there's an email that comes in, it's still going to be there on Monday morning. So if an email comes in at 9 o'clock, I'm not going to answer that at 9 o'clock. Although before, that would have been my natural inclination, is no matter whenever something comes in front of the TV, we're working, whatever, that was my how I used to do things. Now, and we keep each other honest. If one of us is still working, we'll be like, you know, this is our time together. And we have to force the other one to shut down, turn the computer off. And then it's just couple time, which that balance has been amazing. And then doesn't force us to work all the time and become, you know, a little bit resentful. Yeah. Towards it.
And Michael, that's a really important point, because when it comes to customer service, if you are robbed of your quality time with your family, you do have resentment, and that'll show up in your energy. So when you're dealing with clients, you might be a bit shorter. You might not be as empathetic, because I've always said, and on stage, you probably heard me say this before, is that, you know, we spend our lives immortalizing moments for other families at the expense of our own. So, you know, when we're dealing with people that have that luxury that we don't, then arguably that's going to be bad for business. But because we have a balance, we're really excited to share memories with people and create memories for people, because we have memories of our own. And that's a really, really important thing. And then sometimes we're a bit naughty. Like today, what Melissa doesn't know is I'll say, we've got 4 episodes left of House of Cards. I think we should finish early after lunch. Maybe
what you're looking at on the other monitor over there? You're still watching House of Cards?
Yeah.
No, there's no part of it. But sometimes we're a bit naughty and we give ourselves permission. And it's funny because we feel like little kids doing the wrong thing. We own our own business, right? We can do what we want. But if everyone's been satisfied and we think, you know what, if we can't, you know, play or do something, go watch a movie during the day, whatever, during the week, it's like, what's the purpose? So, you know, we give ourselves permission to have fun. And, you know, as Steve Jobs said, there's no point being the richest guy in the graveyard, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think when people say something like, oh, I hate weddings, because I encounter a lot of photographers who are either referring a wedding client to me because they have little to no interest in them, what they really hate is the idea that the weddings are going to start sucking you away from everything that you could be doing in your life, when in reality, if you learn to manage it, that's not the case.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
Being your own boss or running your own company, what it seems to have really done for me is that little line that I used to put on my resume that says self-starter or like self-motivated individual, which is that generic line that you see. I think that actually really puts you to the test. And then you learn if you really are a self-starter, because if you don't move, nothing is ever going to happen. You guys actually didn't come from like royalty, like wedding photography royalty or anything like that. You were not crowned king of weddings and queen of weddings, but you guys actually like scrambled your own way up to the top. How did you work? What was your work ethic? How did you come up in the industry?
You know, I think what you just said is really very key. You either are a self-motivator, self-starter, or you're not. And it's okay if you're not. There are some people that just do not work well self-motivating themselves, getting themselves to work hard and create a business on their own by themselves without a group or a team around them. And if that's the case, that just means that you are a better person in a team and probably work better working for someone else. being successful doesn't necessarily mean owning your own business. It could be doing what you love with a team of other people working for someone else and not having to worry about all the crap that goes along with owning your own business. You may actually enjoy it better. And then there are some people who do work better working for themselves, making their own decisions, having their own schedule. So that it really comes down to perhaps trying it both ways and seeing what you prefer. So I had a different career before photography, loved working with a group, but really enjoy working for myself. And then when I had a studio in Boston for 9-10 years, doing weddings and portraits, and started working in a corporate job and then doing it on the side, as so many photographers do, until my business grew enough, slowly but surely, I started working part-time in my corporate job to dedicate more time to my studio, and then I quit altogether. But it was definitely a slow process for me, whereas Jerry jumped in both feet from the very beginning and never really had any other job except for himself, so he had to force himself to do it quickly.
Yeah, I shot my first wedding at the age of 20, and I knew I wanted to be a photographer at the age of 15. I worked for a studio before I started my own business, but I was relentless. When I started my business, I wanted, if you were getting married, you would know of my studio. And that's what happened. We became the biggest studio, certainly in our state, probably even in Australia, that everyone who was getting married would know us. And that was just me being on the road. That was me surrounding myself with good people, creating a really good team, rewarding them, and just being the guy that delivered, you know, whether it was, you know, shooting a beautiful wedding, whether it was shooting the covers of magazines and bridal magazines and doing editorials, being in bridal fairs. I mean, I tried everything. I mean, I have probably done every kind of marketing you could possibly imagine in the wedding industry. And to be honest, I don't do that anymore because I don't want to get that busy anymore. So it just depends on, you know, what your, you know, where you are at in your industry, your age, and what's your priorities and that kind of thing. But for me, it's always been relentlessly pursuing excellence and not only that, but longevity. I think too many photographers, it's almost like, you know, their business is a 1500 meter race at the Olympics, and then they go out and then they bang, they're right at the gates, and you know, they're going really, really a lot faster than everybody else, and they're going to slow down because you just can't maintain that pace. I've always maintained a steady pace in this industry because I want to be here forever, really. I can't see myself ever actually removing myself from this industry or stop photographing or anything like that. So it's planning for longevity. That's a really important one.
So what do you say to the new photographer? Let's say that I'm a hobbyist here for a couple years, and I've been shooting, and I'm like, you know what? I really like it. My photography's been improving. I'm taking a bunch of workshops. I think I want to be a wedding photographer too. It looks like a lot of fun. How do I do it? Mm-hmm. How do I become a wedding photographer?
I think the best education after workshops and getting your foundation is on the job. And I don't necessarily think that that's by going out and booking clients when you don't have that experience of what needs to be done and having liability insurance and getting yourself set up properly. The best way to start is by finding a photographer or several photographers in your area and then second shooting for them, or carrying their bags for a while until you become super familiar with everything that happens at a wedding. It's so fast paced and there's so many things that you need to cover that you may not be familiar with. But once you start shooting a lot of weddings, you become very accustomed to what comes next. Otherwise, you may miss something that is super important and that can never be done again. But by assisting another photographer or second shooting for another photographer with or without pay, that's even better education than going to lots and lots of workshops, because that's where you finally know exactly what is expected and required of you before you take on that responsibility all by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I carried bags for 2 years before I took a single photograph. These days, people become second shooters because, you know, they put a photograph on Facebook, they get 200 likes, I must be good. Let me second shoot a wedding or shoot a friend's wedding, and then realize there's a lot more pressure than they think that was going to happen. But if you start second shooting straight away, you're not really learning from the main photographer. I think the biggest asset that a photographer can have is their personality, their communication skills, their handling pressure and timing and being assertive and all that kind of thing. That's an important one. I mean, I think, without sounding terrible, I think as an industry we should be ashamed of ourselves, because our industry is not regulated, and which means that you can call yourself a professional photographer by just charging money and you're a professional, and you start shooting an important day for whatever reason. And what I'm saying is that couples have a choice, and good enough is good enough for most couples. They'll spend $500 on a photographer, and that's great. And I'm not begrudging anyone for starting off cheap or begrudging couples for hiring an inexpensive photographer. All I'm saying is if you don't want to get burnt out and be stunted with your growth, start off the right way, is get enough experience to know what it's like to be at those weddings or portraits or whatever events that you're photographing, to be able to get to the point where, you know, no matter what situation you're in, you can handle it. I mean, we go to weddings just in the past year, and I've said to Melissa, if someone less experienced was here at this wedding, I don't know what they would do. Yeah, I'm struggling myself. Yeah. You know, we're struggling with the personalities, with the timing, with the weather, with, you know, all that stuff. I'm like, goodness knows what so-and-so would do. And to be honest, ignorance is bliss from both perspectives. A couple doesn't know the difference between good and bad, and a photographer doesn't know what they've missed. You know?
But honestly, the best way to start is that on-the-job experience. That is just priceless. It's the best way for you to learn what's happening, what's expected of you, and it's fantastic. It's just the best way to do it.
But, you know, the issue is, though, that I speak to many photographers, and for some reason there are so many photographers that are not happy for someone to assist them because they see them as their own competition. And I'm like, well, you know, when I started, you know, there was no internet, you know, there was no digital cameras and phones and things like that. So that was just what you did. You just carried bags. And now many experienced photographers will just not accept, you know, people to come in the job and have a play because they see them as competition. And this is not a glorified plug, but that's the main reason why 8 years ago I started my educational website, the Eye Society, because people get to see what it's like on a real wedding day. Now, you know, there's some times where I'll speak to the camera and be a, you know, like actually talk out loud and discuss things. But more often than not, all my videos on the Eye Society is where you see me on the job and you'll see what it's like to be at an Asian wedding, a Greek wedding, an Italian wedding, a Jewish wedding, overseas, and all the problems that I have. And I don't put all the glamorous weddings up there. There's plenty of indifferent couples of different personalities, sizes, shapes. And you'll see me that I'm challenged. Like, I get grooms that aren't into it, and how do I manipulate them to what I want and all that stuff. But yeah, just don't get stunted. You want to be here for a long time. So don't go out the gate with a ridiculous pace, and otherwise, you know, you won't be here for in a couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I also see that myself. I was fortunate in the fact that I fell into my first gig working for like a large studio where they meet with a sales rep and you get assigned. And the beauty of that, to sort of add on to your point, was that when I did start under my own name, I didn't have to start at $500 or let me just come out and shoot your wedding. I got a chance to start at an actual more or less professional rate. I might have been on the lower end of that, but it was great because my name was not like a generic cheap name right off the bat because of that experience. I spent third shooting. I didn't lug bags, but third shooter was basically the bag lugger. So I was third shooter, then second shooter, eventually made it to first shooter. And after shooting over 100 weddings for them, I finally said, you know what, I think I can do this one on my own. So it takes time.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it's tough though, because you want it right now, because the video's online right now. Like, we are in such an instant society. The camera's right there. I mean, I can just, like, you literally just took the photo. There's the ice light. You took the photo. She looked over there. Like, I mean, I can just replicate what you do, but I can't get into your mind to recognize how you got to that pose to take. I was walking by you one time. You were teaching at Skip Summer School in Chicago. And you were like doing a photo as a demo for a class, but you're shooting off of like some sliver of a metallic reflection that I would walk by 1,000 times and not ever think anything of. And I saw the shot at the end, and I'm like, wow, that's not half bad. So what we don't realize is that while the technology's there, just getting into the mindset of knowing what to do is very, very difficult after that.
No doubt.
Yeah, it's very true.
And the same thing with teaching. Do you guys have a lot of people approach you about teaching who have been in the industry for a short period of time and kind of are leaping ahead a little bit there?
Yeah. All the time. The problem is that people, and I think I'm part of the problem, and in a sense that people look at us and look at likes of me and several others, where people think that this is an easy way to make money from photographers, right? It's a blue chip industry. And I'm like, well, the internet is being good and bad in the sense that if you're bad at what you do in teaching, you'll get exposed very quickly. So that's eliminated a lot of bad teachers out there. And in the same token, if you're good at what you do, then good words will be said about you. And that's fantastic. Now, I've been teaching since 2000, probably ridiculously since 2005 and relentlessly since 2010. So we have a good track record. And certainly, we make money from teaching. But you can't – it's – if you want to do it as a proper job, as a profession, because we consider ourselves professional teachers, you've got to focus on it. To do a lazy talk here and there, it's fine. You can share your experience, but it's not an easy way to make money. I see it as a big responsibility. It's a responsibility that you have. To be a teacher, I think, is one of the most important jobs in the world because you're passing down knowledge to the next generation. And people see it as an easy way to just get into it. And I'm like, you know what? And I see some people come to our workshops and literally we'll do a workshop the month after. And it's based upon our workshop. And it's even the words or phrases that we've popularized are used in these circles. And I'm like, you know what? One of the best things you can do as an artist is respect the people who have come before you. And certainly that shows a bit of disrespect, not only to us, and I don't really care about us, it's actually the people that you're teaching, because I could show you a pose. And it doesn't mean that that's going to be an absolute answer for every single person on every single day. There's so many things that go into it. So you might, it's almost like being a glorified karaoke singer. I'm teaching you how to sing. I'm not teaching you how to sing the way I sing it. And that's the point that people are missing, is that, you know, we're teaching self-fulfillment. This is basically, I'm giving you common denominators that I've learned over the years with no absolute answers. There are common denominators as to, in 22 to 23 years of shooting, this is what I believe works best most of the time on these situations and circumstances. And that's the way it is, yeah.
The way I look at it is very similar to a photographer who wants to start shooting, like what we were just talking about a minute ago, where you can become a photographer very quickly. You can have just purchased a camera this year and begin shooting a wedding by the end of this year. That can happen. And you can even make a little bit of money doing it. The problem is that your career, your lifespan will be very short, because now you've committed yourself and there will come a point where there's some roadblock that comes up, some problem, some issue, and you won't know how to handle it. And so all of a sudden your career will be over. But if you're looking to do this long term, you're looking to make something happen for a long period of time, you have to start slowly, because by starting slowly, you cover all your bases. You build that foundation up. And then when anything comes up, you can handle it. It's not a problem. You've already learned how to deal with every possible scenario that comes up and have the tools to do that. Same thing with teaching. You can be just a baby having just begun photographing and feel that you have the ability to teach, but really you haven't put in the time yet. You can do that. You can begin teaching seminars and workshops right away and make money from it. But the minute someone asks a question or an issue comes up that you don't know how to handle because you're so new yourself, well, then all of a sudden it's all over before it even began. But if you put that time in and learn properly and spend all that time gaining that experience, then this is something that you could do and last for a long, long time as well.
Yeah. Sadly, nobody told me that when I first got in the industry. I kind of rushed in and thought, like, oh, piece of cake. I took one actually amazing photo that might even, well, maybe a few years ago would have merited. But I took my first image, thought I was a photographer, came back, bought all the gear, discovered I wasn't, and then started the long, long journey of learning what I was doing. I know we're approaching actually close to the end of our show, but I did want to throw in one last topic before I let you guys go and watch House of Cards. I don't want to keep you from that.
Thank you. Thank you. We've got 4 episodes left for the current season, so we're excited.
All right, so I'll make it quick. But it actually has to do with the fact that I ripped off You know, and you were talking about like how people will replicate your lecture or something like that. And so, and I'm sure your images as well. And that sort of made me think about a time where I flat out ripped off and copied one of your images that you did to a T. I emailed Melissa shortly after that and I said, hey, like, it's unlikely that you're ever going to see this photo, but it was like the shot of that you did before of all the groomsmen smoking a cigar, like really dark and all their faces kind of layered. And I was in a bind at a wedding and they were like, oh, can you get a photo of us like with our cigars? And I was leaving. I had nothing. But what I did have was my cell phone with a light on it. I still had my camera slung over my shoulder. So I was like, your shot came to my mind. And so I flat out do not deny that I copied you just so that I could get out of there relatively quickly. And then I emailed you guys like the next day immediately. I was like, you know, I did this. It's only going to be for them. Nobody's ever going to see it. I apologize. Like, in case somebody ever posts it online, it's not going to be me. You guys seem to be understanding of it. But you have quite a bit of that. Hopefully you're not too mad at me for that. But you have quite a bit of that that happens.
No, I remember that. Michael. And you know what? I got to tell you, we respected you so much. I did, because we so respected that. Like, totally get it. I mean, and look, there's a lot of people. Jerry's a teacher, right? So he can't expect that no one is going to try to learn by copying his images. But we respected so much that you sent us your image, which was a great image, by the way. I remember that image. And like, that was just, it was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So I don't want the audience out there to really misconstrue even what I said before, because it's an important topic that you're talking about right now. In other words, we all copy. It's as simple as that. You know, whether you either admit it or you don't, there's subconsciously no one is unique. I'm sorry, there is no one that can say that they're absolutely unique. You know, we think Michael Jackson was unique in his dance moves, and he'll say he was influenced by James Brown. And there's very few people in genres and industries that can say they're truly original, unless you're the first of that particular new genre that's being created. But even then, everything's been influenced by everything. Am I the first white person to do a cigar shot? That was done before I was born. Am I the first one to popularize things? Maybe. You know, I have an audience, and what I try to do is lead the industry. I'm not saying lead it. I'm not saying I'm a leader and nor on top. I'm saying is I try to lead by example, where there might be a shot that no one has done before or I haven't seen before. It's elements of things that we've all done, but I popularize it a certain way. So if I teach at a workshop or a seminar, I even tell people as part of my workshop where I'll basically talk about, you know, inspiration, emulation, and innovation or imitation. So everyone starts by copying. You know, if you're a painter, you'll be asked to paint like the masters and Van Gogh and Monet and all those different guys and girls there. And, you know, once you understand what it took for an artist to feel what they felt with that paint coming through the canvas, then it perhaps begin to tell you, give you an idea of what you want to say, because art is a form of communication. The question is, what are you trying to say? So there'll be times on a wedding day that I'll plagiarize myself. I'll do the same crap that I did, you know, how many other weddings? And if I do 2% that's unique, then that's a good day. So, you know, I certainly don't begrudge anyone for looking at my work and being inspired by it and doing something similar. I think the key is that you get to a point where you find your own voice, and you might just add one different element to that photograph that makes it your own. And let me come back to the singing analogy. You know, we're all singing the same song, right? We're all photographing a wedding or a portrait. Now, you could sing a glorified karaoke song and sing it in the exact same pitch and tone and pace of the original, but whenever you see The Voice, for example, and you see an artist that stands out, they'll sing a popular song and they'll add their own annotation, their own pausing and their own difference, and it becomes their story. And it's quite amazing that that happens like that. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say is don't feel bad that you're imitating out there or anything like that. I think we all start that way because there's so much pressure on artists to be unique and unique and unique. I'm like, I'm sorry, we're not really unique. Yes, all I'm saying is, well, what spice have you added to make your dish taste a bit differently to everybody else's? And that's just it. You can photograph the way you want to photograph, and you could just copy a winning formula and create a great business, a great model, you know, or you can add a bit of innovation in there as well. And probably one of the most telling things that I've heard in the last several years, I spoke to a guy recently who sold his company for $40 million And I said, what is the key to making money? Mm-hmm. And he said, repetition and mediocrity. And I said, what? I was expecting something awe-inspiringly different and, you know, unique and be this, be that. And he goes, the ability to reproduce a product or service and the masses will always buy mediocrity above and beyond, you know, something exceptional.
Something that's appealing to the masses as opposed to appealing just to a small niche of people.
And I'm not encouraging mediocrity, certainly. I'm just saying is it's quite telling that, you know, there's going to be a time where you put your business hat on. There'll be a time where you put your artist hat on. Now, I'm an artist on the weekends and I'm a business person during the week.
Yeah. So that's we're not going to say to the listeners, go out there and be your very sort of okay-ish. Get to shooting.
No, I mean, I'm just saying is that, you know, that we all have a goal. But, you know, you were perhaps in emailing us, you were probably putting too much pressure on yourself to be unique and you were probably a bit overzealous and you emailed us and that showed a lot of your character and a lot of your respect, which I think was amazing. But I'm saying that there's people out there that will, you know, copy an image, you know, in a kissing on the bride's cheek. We've all done that. Or, you know, there's just certain things that we can popularize. But when it comes to teaching, I think that's a different story. If I've learned something from somebody else, I'll reference that person's name or the artist or the painter or the sculpture. That's just respect, because for you to actually claim that these words are your own, that's different. I think that's when you have to respect the originator of that particular, you know, media or data, information, whatever, because there's no taboo, you know. Like a perfect example, Johnson Wee, who I love, I think is an amazing guy, great photographer, really amazing, you know, one of the new leaders in our industry. He did an incredible image of this year of these that won a category, the bride and groom non-wedding day category. And we had dinner after WPI as she came to Los Angeles. And he said, Jerry, I want to thank you for the inspiration. That was inspired by one of your images a few years ago. And I told the audience that such like that. And I'm like, if he did that image, claimed it for himself, didn't tell people that this was the idea, and then people saw the original, even though that I was inspired by something in someone else, you know, he would have just been a glorified copier, so to speak. The minute he gave respect, he got more respect himself, not only from me, but from people to say, you know what, there's very few original things in this world. Everyone borrows from everybody, and the fact is that when you can't go too forward in fashion and you've got to go back for inspiration. And he gave me respect. He gave the audience respect, because you make it more attainable. If something comes in your brain that you think is totally unique, someone who's less a mere mortal might say, well, how the hell did you think of that? And if they don't know the original concept or idea, it becomes unattainable, therefore impossible to achieve. But then when, you know, you share your inspiration, then that becomes attainable. Then we all benefit. We all grow.
Yeah. And that is perfectly stated, because anytime I do a talk or something that's educational, I say, okay, rather than just give you a slideshow of my images, let me show you some images and artists that have inspired me. And now let me show you this image that is sort of a culmination of those, and you can see how I came to it, because I feel that that's much more useful to somebody who's newer in the industry, for sure.
Oh, totally.
Perfect.
Well, thank you guys so much for your time. We went just a little bit over, but before I let you go, let's talk about some things that you guys have. You have the Ice Light 2, which is now out everywhere, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yep, everywhere. You can get it from the Ice Light website, theicelight.com, or any of your camera retailers, Sammy's, B&H, Adorama, everywhere.
Helix for our folks in Chicago, and we have ProCam as well.
Yes. That's right, yeah.
And then you have, I didn't actually look at it very much, but your book, I believe, Darling, right?
Yeah, look, really excited about the book, Darling. It's the second book I've produced and published, and it is a culmination of over 200 shots in my career, and it all comes with, you know, the year and the place and the metadata of where it was photographed. But it's really quite personal, because it's set against a backdrop of my philosophy on life, love, and photography. It's quite very personal. So you really get to know me and Melissa, for that matter, as people and as an artist, and you probably understand perhaps the way it all works. So we're really excited about that. But basically anything you want to learn about us is all at www.jerryguionis.com. So JERRYGHIONIS. And from there, you can see our wedding website. From there, you can go to our portrait website. You can see our lighting products, the Ice Light, the Omega Reflector. The book Darling is obviously there. And of course, we've got the Ice Society, which we're really proud of, actually, mate. We just released our 100th chapter. So every single month, on the first of every month for 100 months in a row, over 8 years, we were one of the first to actually deliver content online in our industry, and we are still going strong. So if you do want to learn about, you know, what it's like to be on a wedding day at a boudoir shoot, a portrait fashion, amongst business tips and ideas and other incredible stuff, jump on there. It's fantastic.
Well, very cool. I will let our listeners check that out. And thank you again for your time. Of course, you guys can also be found every year at WPPI. And if you want more information, where can folks go if they want to find out more about the WPPI print competition?
So you can go to WPPIawards.com. That's specifically about the WPPI competition. And if you want to find out more about WPPI, it's WPPIonline.com. So those two websites.
Very cool. Well, I hope you guys have a wonderful time back in Australia. And,
thank you.
And I look forward to running into you guys at the next random conference that I decide to show up at.
Yeah, so do we. Thank you so much, Michael.
Sounds good, mate. Thank you.
Thanks.